To order this morning, today is Thursday, February the 3rd, Mr. Administrator. It's the year 2005. Are you with me?
It's
Are you here on this day?
I still write 19 and you know, so yes. 2005 it is.
All right. Well, since we're all together and we know what the day is, we certainly know what our purpose is. And I want to express appreciation for those of you who are here today. And we'd like to recognize the veterans. If you'd just give me a...
Hear, hear.
We greatly appreciate you and appreciate the uncommon valor you've shown. That is common value to you, and we appreciate all you've done for us for freedom. I'd like to call on our invited testimony today, Frank Fryer. Would you come forward, please? If anybody else wants to testify, please sign up on the sign-up sheet by the door. And everyone knows that we're a acronym-free hearing. Without penalty. Good morning,
Madam
Mr. Fryer.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I've given you some biographical information on myself. My name is Frank Fryer, formerly a County Veteran Service Officer, presently the legislative liaison to the County Veteran Service Officers Association. I'm going to speak about things that began back in 1999. I was working for Multnomah County at the time. I still am, but I'm in a different capacity. And they were cutting my position, so I figured I better do something to keep my job. One of the things that I ran across was I was the Veteran Service Officer in Multnomah County, and I was working within the Aging and Disability Service offices in Multnomah County at the time. So many of my clients were joint clients of Aging and Disability Service Offices and the Veterans Administration. It became very apparent to me that what I was doing for the county was getting money into the county and at the same time saving the state general fund and the state Medicaid system quite a bit of money. No one else, I'm sure other people saw that. But no one seemed to see the significance of, if you expand what I was doing or what my compatriots around the state were doing, we could save a lot of money for the state system and at the same time free up money for non-veterans in the state system and also bring in federal dollars that were not going to be coming into the state without some assistance. As you've probably heard by now, the Veterans Administration rules and regulations on acquiring pension or compensation are quite complicated. When the original pilot project started, one of the difficulties we had in the spreadsheet that I presented to the members evidences that is that for the first 5 or 6 months we were essentially losing money. We were losing money because it takes a while to go through the VA system, anywhere from 6 months to 18 months without significant assistance on the part of a county veterans officer and cooperation from the U.S. federal administration. Now, we had an agreement because of this program with the local veterans administration, the federal government, to process completed claims expeditiously. Well, as you're well aware, federal government expeditious treatment means anywhere from 6 months to a year. We were getting claims done in a month. And we were able to do that because we presented them with a complete package, everything they needed to make a decision. They love those because it makes their numbers look good for Washington, D.C. So that they had no problem making that agreement with us. The problem we had was we had untrained people trying to bring that together. That was worked out as... Again, as the spreadsheet shows, as we went along, we started out, the approximate cost per month of that pilot project was $25,000 a month. That was all the cost for, essentially, for the staff in two counties. And we were not bringing in much to begin with, but it starts to grow. A lot of the people that were on, that we brought into the system under veterans benefits are still in the system under veterans benefits. They're still saving the state money. The problems we had at the time were that SPD was not particularly fond of our idea.
I'm sorry, Mr. Fryer, I'm going to have to ask you to contribute to our Veterans Fund because you used the acronym SPD. And I know you're a very nice man, but I'll just remind you that on your, so you remember as you leave. But
I've
would
got
you,
it covered.
Oh, okay. Would you please tell us what that means and what year this is?
At the time it meant seniors and persons with disabilities.
Still does.
They still do. They keep changing their names, so that's one of the reasons the acronyms are a very bad reason to use those, but also that was should have been in 2002, I believe. I don't have the dates, the year in front of me. We had problems with the way they wanted us to count recoveries. We went through many meetings to try and figure out how should we count getting someone off of Medicaid and onto veterans benefits, how much that would mean per person per month. There's many different ways of doing it. We did the most conservative approach, and that's what these numbers reflect. The Veterans, the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs,
okay,
also didn't support us very well. It was a philosophical difference. They believed that my opinion of what they believed was that we did not need to be going into the senior disabled system assisting vets. We should just be assisting the vets as they came into our office. Our idea was this pilot project was going to be proactive. We were going to go into present clients within the state system and trying to find out who are the veterans, who are the dependents of veterans, and get them out of that system into the Veterans Administration system. Now, the significance of doing that is much more impressive than it sounds. As an example, if a veteran has $500 or $1,000 in Social Security benefits, and that veteran needs to be in a foster home, as it stands right now, a foster home placement is about $1,500 per month. The way that the system works, the veteran would pay $890 of his $1,000 towards his care. The state would pick up the rest. Medicaid would pick up the rest. 40% of that would be state funding. When they get veterans benefits, instead of $1,000, that veteran has approximately $2,400 to spend. Now, what that means is that the veteran is still eligible for those services for case management because the veteran's benefits do not trigger him being over resources or over income for that service. But what it does do is allow the veteran to pay the entire cost of his care. We were able to capture those savings. The savings we weren't allowed to capture, according to the criteria set up by seniors and persons with disabilities, was the medical side of it. When a veteran goes into a foster home, into a nursing home, assisted living center, all of his medicine is paid for by the VA. It's supplied by the VA. If he needs a hospital bed, the VA supplies it. If he needs crutches, the VA supplies it. Wheelchair, whatever durable medical equipment the person needs, the Veterans Administration will supply. Much faster, an OMAP will get it to them, much faster than Medicaid will get it to them. And there's no cost to the state.
So who will get it to them, sir?
The Veterans Administration.
Did you say OMAP?
Yes, I'll pay afterwards.
Okay.
And what I'm not even sure what OMAP means exactly. That's one of the reasons I used it. Okay. Oregon Medical something or other.
Representative Barnhart, what does OMAP mean?
I'm not sure either, Madam Chair. The acronym is used so commonly that we forget what the words are.
Representative Hunt?
I think it's the Office of Medical Assistance Programs.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, I'll try to remember that in the future.
You can see why we use the acronym.
You're right.
The other things that are not included in the pilot project that weren't allowed to be included were getting veterans service-connected disabilities. What that means is if a veteran's injured either through disease or accident or gunshot wounds or explosions or whatever while he's on active duty, which also includes when he's home on leave driving around in the car, those injuries are considered to be service-connected. Now, for a service-connected vet, he gets not only medical care treatment for life for his disability, but at certain percentages, it triggers different amounts of medical benefits.
The percentage of disability, you mean?
Percentage of disability.
Okay.
Now, at 30%, he's considered to be a seriously disabled vet. He gets a lot of ancillary benefits, but he also gets additional payment for his wife and children.
And what would that be? We're back to this example you used where this veteran got $2,400. What would that?
That would be pension. Service connection is a different.
And
two different,
so the first one was under pension.
Right.
Okay, and now this one's under?
Service-connected disabilities.
Okay, and what would he get?
It would range from, I haven't seen the new rates for this year yet because I'm not working out of field right now.
Just estimate, please.
Probably $110 a month.
Regardless. In addition to his pension?
No, that would be in addition to whatever income he has. Pension is for veterans either 65 or older, or who are unable to work.
But considering he's 65 or over, and he discovers he's got a service-related disease or injury, like Agent Orange, would he get his pension plus the 110?
He would get the greater of the two benefits when they're over 65.
He gets one or the other?
Yes.
Okay.
Now, the top rate for a veteran, a service-connected vet, a few years ago, I had one who had multiple disabilities from disease, from MS. That veteran was getting almost $6,000 a month from the Veterans Administration.
So he was 100%.
He was 100% plus. The VA has 100% disability plus other disabilities that they tack on. Loss of use of bodily functions, loss of use of legs, loss of use of arms. There's all kinds of add-ons that go into that. So that was the case in Multnomah County. They had the most money that I saw coming in. It was almost $6,000 a month that veteran was being paid for his disabilities. Totally taking care of his care. He had been a client within the Medicaid system. He still was a client within the Medicaid system because that did not kick him out. He was getting case management, but the state wasn't paying anything for his care, or for his medicines, or for his hospital bed. But getting back to the other part of the service-connected disability, we weren't allowed to capture any of that in our savings either. And when a veteran gets to be 50% service-connected or above, all of his medical is taken care of by the Veterans Administration, except for dental work. So all his prescriptions, any surgeries he needs, all that's taken care of with no state funding whatsoever. At 70%, if the veteran needs to be in a nursing home, the Veterans Administration picks up all of those costs. And as you're well aware, nursing home costs in the state are, I think...
prohibitive?
Well, yes. That's why we have the
Project Independent?
The incentive to have people in adult foster homes and RCFs, which is residential care facilities. Did I slip that one by?
Good! Can a veteran be in any of these, any of his choice?
Yes. If the veteran needs nursing home care, obviously that's where he's going to be. The Veterans Administration doesn't have the same system that the state does for assistive care. They have nursing homes or they have in-home care type facilities.
So may I understand this better? Because one of the contention or difficult situations that we have when we move our veterans off of Medicaid back to the veterans is, let's say one's in a home somewhere that is not accredited by the veteran system. That individual's there. If we went in, we would just pick him up and move him to one that would be accredited by the veterans.
Well, the Veterans Administration The Veterans Administration doesn't accredit.
Well, what do they do? Approve?
They will have a contract in
okay, contract. Homes. Okay, so one that he's let's say my dad is disabled and he is in this home here in Salem. Mm-hmm. This is what we thought was best under Medicaid. Now, if you're going to move my dad because this facility here does not have a contract with the veterans. cannot put him on the veterans.
In most cases, the veterans are not putting him somewhere. They're just giving the money to have his care taken care of. The Veterans Administration will not go and tell a veteran, you have to move from facility A to facility B because that's where we have a contract. The Veterans Administration will say, here's $1,200 to $1,400 more per month to pay for your care, wherever you want to get it.
Really?
Right. The Veterans Administration, in fact, the way that the aid and attendance section of the Veterans Pension Law works, the veteran doesn't even have to be in a care home to get that money. He just has to need that care. It's based on the veteran's status, physical or mental status, not his living situation.
And that's based on, did you say Article 8?
That's Title 38 of the U.S. Code.
Title 38.
United States Code.
Of the U.S. Code.
May I
inquire? Yes, Representative Barnard.
So in effect, then, the veteran has the right to manage his own care?
Completely.
Under that system?
Yes. In fact, the Veterans Administration system is extremely concerned with and sensitive to the veteran's personal choices. The Veterans Administration doesn't require a vet to do hardly anything except get the benefits he should be getting and is deserved.
So okay.
He or she.
Well, so to finish the...
Follow on.
If I may. So to finish the example, then, in the case of Representative Nelson's father that we're talking about here, he could stay in the place that he was that he'd been staying if that was his desire, even though he switched from a Medicaid program to a payment by the Veterans Administration.
Yes, not only would he be able to stay there, but the care facility would be more than happy to let him stay there because he would go from being a Medicaid client with a cap on payment to a private pay person with no cap. Now, what happens sometimes, and when I was doing that job, I was able to do this where Medicaid was paying $1,500 a month to the care facility, and the veteran, after I got him his benefits, had about $2,300 worth of disposable income for his care. I would go into the Medicaid facility or the facility and say, you know, I want to get this guy into this better situation for him and for you, but I want you to take all his money. But if you take all of his money, I'm not going to bother doing it because all I'm going to do is help you and not him. So we were able to negotiate rates, I would say. So the veteran would have a few little more spending money. The facility would get paid better, and the state would pay nothing.
So, Mr. Fryer, let me just say, since my father lives at Klamath Falls, he likes the Old Boys Nursing Home. Old Boys Nursing Home does not have a contract with the veterans. So you would move him out to one that has a contract with the veterans. He does not want to come to Portland, which is his closest one.
The VA does not have a series of nursing homes they have contracts with.
Oh, I thought you said they did.
No.
They
will contract with a nursing home. They don't have specific nursing homes that they will contract with. They will contract with any nursing home that's accredited. The VA does not... The Veterans Administration...
Because I just said that.
Veterans Administration does not accredit nursing homes. That's the state's function.
Okay, so let's say the nursing home in Klamath Falls is not accredited by the state. Can he stay there? He loves those old boys there.
If he's in a nursing home in Klamath Falls not accredited by the state, then the state Medicare is not going to pay for him either.
So nothing would pay for him.
Actually, the Veterans Administration...
He's got to go all the way to Portland to be in a home, because there's not one closer.
The Veterans Administration can still pay for him if they want to.
How? Under what?
Because the Millennium 2000 Health Care Act states that the Veterans Administration will pay nursing home care for any veteran who's 70% service-connected or above.
The Millennium 2000
Health Care Act.
Thank you so much. So my dad then can stay at the Old Boys Nursing Home. Doesn't matter if the state's accredited or not.
If the state didn't accredit, the federal government would go out and do a study to make sure it was safe and adequate place, because they're not going to give federal funds to someplace that's not going to be safe for a vet.
Well, I thought they didn't give the funds to the home. I thought they gave the funds directly to the individual.
I realize this is real complicated.
I know, but didn't you say I would get the money and I can use it anywhere earlier?
That's the problem with the two systems we have. Service Connected is different than pension. Pension, they just give the money and you go where you want to go. Service Connected, because they're directly paying for the care, they have some control over where the veteran would go. They do not move the veteran around haphazardly. They would prefer to have the veteran wherever he wants to be, because they're not running a nursing home system. All there is a funding source from the Congress to the veteran. And in this case, it's not a payment to the veteran, it's a payment to the nursing home under a service-connected case. Under a pension case, it's a payment to the veteran, and the veteran takes care of the payments. I realize I'm mixing the two systems, and unfortunately,
well, what
I do
I'm
that
trying
too
to get
often
at,
because
you,
I'm so used to it.
If you don't mind, excuse my ignorance, but I've had a lot of complaints about this situation, so I'm trying to understand, because what you're telling me seems to nullify all these complaints I've got. The complaint is there are veterans who would like to be in a certain home. But under the pilot program, what that did was, if it moved them off of Medicaid, they could not be in that home. They had to go elsewhere if they were put on the veterans program.
That was not the case in Multnomah County. I'm not sure where the complaints were coming from. As I said, the nursing homes, adult foster homes, residential care facilities all have some Medicaid, or some have some Medicaid beds, some have private beds. They do. If you're off of, first of all, veterans don't go off of Medicaid when they get this benefit. They're still Medicaid clients. It's just that they're paying the entire cost of their care. So if
does the veterans then pay the state of Oregon something?
The veterans pay. They don't. The way it is, if a veteran doesn't have the aid and attendance benefit, he just has $1,000, then the veteran pays that into the Medicaid system, the state of Oregon. The state of Oregon pays the rest of his care, whatever, he makes up the difference. If the veteran has more than the cost of his care, then the veteran just pays it to the facility and keeps the difference. But he stays under Medicaid for case management, because the aid and attendance benefit is specifically excluded, is exempt from being counted towards eligibility, but it's not. But it's counted towards paying if necessary. And I apologize. This is a very complicated system, which is why we need specialists working in it.
Well, especially because of the complaints about the difference. And, I've been told specifically that I'd be danged if, I'm going to let my brother, my dad, be moved out of a nursing home where he is just because some county veterans officer wants him off of Medicaid so they have more money back in the general fund. That's what I'm trying to understand, because it has been a prevalent issue. So I don't know. Maybe it's, I don't know where it came originates, because fortunately I've not been there, but I'm sad for those who have encountered that. Maybe it's a county veterans officer who does not know what all you know. Maybe we need to have schooling on this.
There is a lack of training amongst county veterans officers in general. Not because they're not dedicated people, not because they're not trying hard.
Right.
It's an extremely complicated system, the Veterans Administration system, as is the Medicaid system. Right now I'm working as a case manager in the Medicaid system, so my person I hired could keep his job, because I was able to go to both ways. The system we're working now is extremely complicated. You get those two systems together, and the case managers don't know the Veterans Administration system. Most county veteran service officers don't know the Medicaid system, and so you've got these two systems kind of butting heads, so to speak. But there's no reason to be moving anybody anywhere within the system. All it is a shifting of funding from the state and the Medicaid system to the Federal Veterans Administration system. And this is the perfect time to do it because finally in Congress we've got people saying we should help vets more.
Would it be possible, Mr. Fryer, to get a copy of the COPP? Sorry, I did it.
I don't know what that one is.
You beat me up.
I'm going to learn to bring my purse one of these days. Sorry. I was going to say, we use that for corporate operating policies and procedures. Could we get a copy of this, the details of this procedure, so my good committee members here could understand it? This appears to be one of the top three issues that we have regarding payment of services, and I really appreciate your being here and explaining it to us.
Well, I don't know how good a job I've done explaining it, more confusing it to you.
Well, you've answered the questions, though, that I've asked, and I appreciate it. Would it be possible to get a copy?
What I can do is, I can get you a copy of Title 38 U.S. Code. But
no, I don't want that. I want yours.
Or the Millennium Health Care Act. Well,
I want your program of how...
Because almost all of it's up here.
Okay. Well, if you come to my office, I have an excellent administrator, if you have a moment. And she could put this down in a format as you would tell her how the procedure happens. We'd do it for you.
Well, I have some that I've done for case managers in Multnomah County for training that I'll get made up. I have to redo them because rates have changed.
Well, we don't care about specific rates. But also
the process itself.
The process is what we need to understand. We want to do what's right for the veteran.
Right. And as I said, there's two concurrent benefit streams.
Right.
And the service-connected one is one that's been underutilized because, unfortunately, with the pilot project, we weren't given any credit for any of those. So our emphasis was on pension vets. But with a service-connected vet, we have a lot of veterans from Vietnam, from Korea, still alive, that have injuries that have not been addressed by the Veterans Administration. We also have veterans, I'm helping four right now in my evenings, with claims against the Veterans Administration because they were injured during Korea, and they've never been reevaluated. These are veterans who had frostbite from the Chosen Reservoir, who've had circulatory and feet problems ever since, and were given a service-connected disability back in the mid-50s of 10%. One gentleman was lost a foot. He should be at least 50% for his service-connected disability. No one's bothered to tell him. The Veterans Administration certainly isn't going out and telling the veterans these things. And no one's helped him. So it's easy for me to do. I've been doing it for years, so I can...
Well, I think that's wonderful of you to do. Thank you for doing that.
Well, it's fun to fight the federal government, so...
I'm sorry.
It's fun to fight the federal government.
Fun to fight.
That's what I thought you said.
Well, we agree here in the state. We do that. Could you tell me, would there be any disadvantages for veterans who are moved off of the Medicaid to the veterans program? Like, is there a cap in the veterans program? Is there a limit to number of years? Or it doesn't matter even if you're out of the service 20 years later when you find out Agent Orange did impact you, can you get the same benefits as you would have if you'd have continued?
And again, we're going into two different programs. The Agent Orange thing, it would be a service-connected disability, and that's, you can bring that up at any time.
At any time?
Any time.
Okay.
The state had one time had a contract with attorneys to represent veterans on disability claims. I was one of the two attorneys in the state doing that. I had World War II POWs from Bataan in my caseload. They never filed a claim. This was in the mid-70s. I was starting to get those guys' benefits. And a service-connected disability can be brought up at any time.
Okay.
For pension, also can be brought up at any time. A pensioner in fact, that's what we're getting into our system a lot now, is early Vietnam vets and later Korean vets who no longer are able to work. Their disabilities are catching up to them. Their income is low. And many of these veterans that had psychological problems from the war and wasn't recognized for many years, the Veterans Administration fought post-traumatic stress disorder for so long that they increased the severity of most veterans' psychiatric claims because they ignored them.
Is there mental parity in the veterans program with all other diseases, mental illness parity?
The service-connected ratings are not as liberal in the mental health sections as they should be. For example, they don't recognize that a 70% veteran suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder is virtually unemployable because the employer does not know when he's going to miss work or how he's going to miss work, or if management gives him an order, he might snap. That's one of the symptomatology of.
And the veterans program does not recognize that.
They gave him the difference between a 70% disability under the veteran system and a 100% disability is about $1,300 a month. And so they try and limit that as much as possible. But still, there's ways of winning and fighting, but they need advocates. And that's what the county veteran service officers are.
So would you say then, other than that particular issue, that there are no other disadvantages to being put on the veterans program from Medicaid? Any services you can't get?
You know, right now I'm a Medicaid case manager. If I could get every one of my clients on VA, I would do it, because they get all their medicines free. There's never a problem with medical equipment. I have a couple of veterans on my caseload. One veteran needed a wheelchair fix. The seat in his wheelchair was breaking. Under the Oregon Medical Assistance Program, that person would have had to wait a month or 2 months.
He's good, isn't he?
I called up someone at the VA hospital in the prosthetics department, who I've known for years, and in 2 days he had a brand new wheelchair.
That is wonderful.
He wasn't fixed. He had a new wheelchair.
Thank you, Mr.
I asked him what he should do with the old wheelchair. He said, give it to somebody else so we don't take them back. Veterans Administration is extremely liberal in their equipment distribution.
Are there reimbursement for durable equipment, are they the same in the veterans program as they are in Medicaid? If you get $1,000 for a wheelchair in one, do you get $1,000 in the other?
No, the Veterans Administration provides the equipment directly.
Directly. And are you ever made aware of what they're being charged for that durable equipment under the veterans program?
The veterans aren't charged anything.
Well, let me word that differently. Do you ever get to look at the costs?
No, because it's like out of sight, out of mind. We're not paying for it. The vet's not paying for it. The state's not paying for it. So I don't really care.
Well, the reason I would bring that up is because we just this summer had a case with a care provider who was charging 700% to Medicaid for the cost of some durable equipment, which, of course, hurts the Medicaid plan.
Yes.
But under law, they were allowed to do it, so they did it. That's my concern.
Right. And if a veteran is going to receive durable medical equipment from the Veterans Administration, there's going to be no cost to the vet, no cost to the state, no cost to Medicare. And the Veterans Administration has contracts with that their procurement office checks all the time on the cost of care. Now, when you're asking about the cost of wheelchairs, for the most part, under the Medicaid system, the wheelchair is going to be a fairly standard issue. The Veterans Administration fits people with wheelchairs. Their prosthetics department doesn't just say, you need a wheelchair. Here's wheelchair A because you're this size, wheelchair B because you're this size. They will actually have a doctor look at the client, look at the patient, and decide which kind of wheelchair they want. It would best suit their needs. They'll have racer wheelchairs. They'll have these heavy-duty wheelchairs for heavy clients. They adapt the prosthetic devices specifically for each vet. So it's a better system all around for just about everything. The only complication is once a year they have veterans on pension have to send in a report about their income. But they have to do that in the Medicaid system also.
Well, I just want you to know that I appreciate your positive spirit. I am very impressed with your vast amount of knowledge. I just wish every veterans officer or anyone, you know, who's dealing with our veterans, you know, understood the system. Just want to allow one of our veterans to, other veterans speak. Stay right there, please, and identify yourself, please.
Madam Chair, my name is Kevin O'Reilly. I'm with the Oregon Paralyzed Vets, and I think I can answer your question.
Okay.
The VA has contracts with medical equipment providers, and they get a much better price because of the volume that they do. For instance, my wheelchair would run about $1,200, and the VA picks it up for about $800. So it's a significant savings for the taxpayer.
Well, thank you.
The volume they can do.
Well, that is good to know, contrary to the Medicaid system, which is...
You're paying a private provider for with their profit margin.
Okay.
So that's a big difference.
Thank you so much. Appreciate that. Any other questions of Kevin? Thank you very much, Kevin.
If I could add that a little bit.
Okay.
Madam Chair, I do.
Oh, yes. Wait, Kevin. Come back, please. Of course. Representative Boquist.
Yeah, Madam Chair, this is kind of completely off the existing topic, but since we're at bill closure time, I thought I would allow Kevin the opportunity. If there were one or two things that this committee could do in the form of statutory changes or something, because you realize you know we're at bill closure. So... are there one or two things you would suggest the committee could do or should be prepared to do in, for example, filing a draft bill so that we could discuss at a later time?
Not off the top of my head. Kind of caught me cold on that one. I'd have to think about it a bit.
I would tell, Kevin, I would tell Representative Boquist and the committee, I did file a bill for this very issue of having a designated wheelchair parking slot where we have designated handicap parking, and that bill has been filed.
That's one big help.
You're welcome.
Thanks.
Okay, any other questions, Chair? Okay, how about questions to Mr. Fryer? Representative Boquist?
Madam Chair, same question. Same date. What is the key? And I guess I should preface this, Madam Chair, because the one thing we're finding out is that there's a whole plethora of veterans benefits out there, but other than the county service veterans officers, no one person can talk about these things. And so this is all, this whole thing is coming through a fire hose. It's about a 4-inch main coming out of about a 1-inch hose. And so I see that there's a problem with county veterans service officers, Madam Chair, because we don't fund it. This is the point of contact for everybody. There's obviously a backlog elsewhere. So here's your, I guess, your plea. What is it we should do to fix this thing?
Well, I think there's going to be a bill presented, I'm not sure if it has been, to fund county veteran service officers, similar to the pilot project of a few years ago, directly through seniors and persons with disabilities. The reason for funding through that way is because, for the most part, the most bang for the buck is going to be getting all of the Medicaid clients into the veteran system. Now, county veteran service officers see everybody who comes in the door. It's not going to just be Medicaid clients. In fact, we see a lot of people who come in the door and end up becoming Medicaid clients later on because they don't... they need more services after a while than they can get through the Veterans Administration until they have pension issues where they can't work at all and they're disabled. One of the things that's happened in the past is that the legislature has given $100,000 twice to the county veteran service officers. The first time, the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs gave it back when they were asked for a budget cut, and we were able to get that restored. The second time, Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs gave it back as part of their contribution back to the state general fund system, so the county veteran service officers did not get any of that money. If that's going to happen again, I would put provisions in that bill to make sure that Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs distributes the money the way it was intended to be distributed. But primarily funding county veteran service officers an adequate level, not only for the availability to the veterans out there, but for training. As I mentioned, in some of the smaller counties, we have part-time county veteran service officers. The Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs is statutorily, or regulatorily, rather, required to provide training to County Veterans Service officers twice a year. Lately, they have been doing it once a year. The training is inadequate. In many cases, the training is let's see, I've been to so many of them. It's a look at the good job we're doing. This is our state vets home loan program. This is our the state veterans home program. And any questions? There are very few classes where new county veteran service officers are given in-depth, step-by-step training on how to present proper claims, how to do appeals properly. One of the reasons is there's a big turnover at the management level of the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. We have a new director there, Jim. Last name?
Willis,
very nice man.
Have you met with him yet?
I've met him a few times.
Have you sat down with him and worked on this?
No, I haven't, because when I resigned my job as a county veteran service officer, Jeff Hill became the president. I know Jeff has tried to meet with Jim on numerous occasions and hasn't really had much of a chance to meet with him. And Jim comes from a background. He was on the governor's advisory board to the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. But he doesn't have a background in veterans benefits. The deputy director does not have a background in veterans benefits. The head of the services department there does not have a background in veterans benefits. So they have the chiefs are all running, or not running around, they're all sitting up there giving orders to the workers about what to do, and they have never done the job themselves. It's the same thing at the federal level. The appointees at the top are always people who have no experience in the system. We need to get training at all levels. At Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs level, we need to get training at County Veterans Service Officers level. So a very long-winded answer to your question.
Well, I'd be happy to get you together, and I hope we'll have a chance to visit after this meeting.
I think you'd be
very helpful to this department here. Any other questions? Thank you very much. We certainly appreciate appreciate your support. Okay, is there any other testimony today? Please come forward.
Madam Chair, members, my name is Matt McDonald, and I represent the veterans organizations. I'd just like to inform you, in case you don't know, a veteran can go to any retirement home or assisted living home in the state with, if you have a certain percentage of disability, at no cost. But he cannot go to the veterans home because of a quirk in the law. Mr. Willis from the Department of Veterans Affairs has worked with Senator Smith and I think Representative Hooley to get the law changed. But this time, if I wanted to go to a retirement home or assisted living facility, I can go to anyone in the state except the state veterans home. And it's federal law that covers this. It was left out of the Millennium Bill. And there is a bill going in Congress at the present time to change this. And I'll get a white paper over to you that explains the whole thing.
Thank you. Thank you for informing us, and I'm glad to know that we'll appreciate that.
Quite well.
That is not good. Any questions of Mr. McDonald? Okay. Thank you very much. All right. Seeing that there is no other testimony, I'm going to pass out I'm going to pass out. I have here. A packet that I prepared because we agreed that today we were going to discuss many of the issues that have come before us while we have all been serving on this. committee. I'll just take one and then... Okay, thank you very much. The purpose today is to, discuss issues without particularly naming House Bill numbers or LC numbers, but primarily the issues. So, what I've done on the first sheet is list the proposals that are currently either in Legislative Council or have been drafted or are in the presence of being drafted right now. To this list, I would ask you to add 6 that I found this morning, just a few minutes ago, that aren't, so you can look them up if you would, please. And the first one is HJM 2, which is relative to health care. Senate Bill 223, relative to home loans. Senate Joint Memorial 1, that is relative to full-time manning and attaining federal funding of the Guard. The last ones, Senate Bill 18 and Senate Bill 19, both relate to compensation and benefits. And Senate Bill 223 relates to veterans and home loans. So, with this list now, if you find other bills or you know of other LCs that have been drafted or in the process of being drafted, just for the sake of this sheet, I would appreciate knowing those. I have researched under every title that I think you possibly can, from the Armed Services to the National Guard, the military, the Veterans Department, the veterans, taxation, and housing, I believe. So this is the master list as I know it today. Okay. If you would turn to the next page, I'll just let you know what these are. The first one says other veteran issues for consideration, and dated February the 2nd. And the first section includes proposals for House bills that we have received from an individual. Have y'all located this page?
So yes.
Okay. And you'll see it goes to Z5. Okay. The next division is our proposals for joint memorials, and it goes through S. And the last section, the proposals for joint resolutions, goes through D. So I think it would be acceptable now to add what we learned from Mr. Fryer, the fact that we need to do something about the process where we have veterans who have never been reevaluated and may need services. That is something we might want to add as of the meeting today. But if we could, is it okay to just review these?
You're under the order of business of veterans issues.
Okay.
Well, I think you're free to talk about whatever you want.
Okay. I'll just start on the first issue of House bills, proposals, funding the expansion program and are the county veterans officers. And I'll have to tell you that I had a hand in this one. And, where we're currently at $11,000 as a contribution from the state, which is matched. I've recommended it be a $15,000 with a matching fund from counties. Now, we all know we cannot require a mandate from a county, but I felt there was some way possibly we could work this. With a requirement for the Director of Veteran Affairs and the County Veterans Officers together to establish what we do not have at the current time, which are responsibilities, accountability, and we just heard mention of the need for training sessions. And discussion?
Yes, Madam Chair. To add to the further discussion that you just raised, I have in legislative council on behalf of county commissioners, and they brought this to me, in fact, a referendum that establishes permanent funding for the county services officers. And in addition to that, it has a scholarship clause in it. And I haven't seen the details of it because it hasn't come out of legislative council, but that is, in fact, being done on behalf of county commissioners that came to me.
Is that an association or?
No.
Counties, no.
And
specific commissioners.
Specific commissioners. And until it comes out and they review it and approve it, and I don't want in a public forum to release their names. However, in general, what it does is establish permanent funding, and it utilizes funds that aren't presently, for a better word, utilized.
That exist.
The funds actually exist, but they're not being utilized. It's one of those murky $41 billion funds that's out
right.
there, and there happens
like
to be
like the public purpose fund.
Right, there happens to be 36.
To be that.
All right, it has to be $36 million sitting around in excess change in this one fund.
Yes,
and it gets more and more each year, and so that is coming up.
I
would say to that, to me, the single most fiscal responsible thing we can do to address veterans is to solve the 1-inch gap here at County Veteran Services, because most counties don't have a full time person. And so what literally happens with a veteran is I would assume they call, and they don't get anybody to return their call in 5 or 6 days because they only work 0.2%. Kind of like, wouldn't it be great if teachers were 0.2, right?
Mm-hmm.
How well would this work? And so I think, I don't think the or fund some amount of officers really needs to be addressed. And this is, the county, I don't really see it as a county function. It's great that it's the counties, but what they're doing is they're mapping out for state and federal people to go to. So, however this is going to be, LC-115 is going to be drafted, I think or figure out a way to fund this thing. Now, if the referendum that comes forth comes out of the House and the Senate, it would solve that problem basically starting in January of next year. So, therefore, the fiscal impact of the state funding these things out of general fund dollars would only be from that 7 or 8 month period. So, I think at some point we have to mesh these together. But I do have that referendum coming out. And if the committee would like to look at it so that they know what we're doing, or if the committee would like to adopt it, I have no problem. I have no pride of ownership. But it is going to come out in a referendum format, because in order to make those changes, it turns out they're embedded in the Constitution. And so we don't have legal authority to do it. But therefore, the governor doesn't have legal authority to veto it either.
Okay. Any other remarks on that one? I would like to see it. I think it's worthwhile. And I don't know how many officers you're talking about. I just took, what's current, the 40 officers, because of the 5-year, which I can't identify. I can't understand the allocation of veterans, because we have yet to fully look at the state and see how many veterans there are per county, and I'm sure the distribution probably needs to be corrected. So, but at least one, every county would have at least one full-time county veterans officer. Okay, the next proposal was requiring colleges to establish credit for military service that would apply to a degree.
But, I think that already exists.
You think it does?
Yeah. And there's a,
I don't know.
There is a acronym out there for an organization within the federal government that assists colleges in establishing this, and I'm not going to pay the fine, and I can't even guess it. But I literally saw this organization like 2 days ago. So I don't know. Maybe the question is the committee administrator might want to call a community college or a higher. But I think that law actually exists on the book someplace.
Okay, could we look that up, please?
I'll check that out.
Makes sense. Okay. it's a very good idea. I mean, you have 2 years of college already behind, and, you know, okay. The next one is to establish a task force to evaluate the medical plans and payer for the Oregon Guard program.
Hear, hear.
I'm on board, ma'am. The only question I have is, I mean, as we know, education and medical care are the two biggest issues, and we have yet to find TRICARE, and bill cutoff is Monday.
TRICARE will be here a week from today.
Of course. Any questions regarding this?
Yes.
So are you proceed until you tell me no. The next one is fund interim Oregon Guard meetings or training during 6 months following completion of active duty to assess at-risk soldiers. At the present time, it's my understanding there are no funds available for that. Yes, go.
Let me ask a question. Would this be state funding, or are you talking about encouraging the federal government to...
No, these are bills. This is state.
Madam Chair, because I think we learned from testimony from Colonel Caldwell that they're going to take out a hide 3 months to start with and try and get it...
And thank goodness out of utilities.
Right, out of power savings.
Right.
My natural gas bill, I don't know how they can do that. But.
Okay, these are state. Okay, the next one, then, is to fund memorials. And you recall we had testimony where a man came in and asked if we would fund at Camp Adair. He only wanted $20,000 to fix, repair. I should guess we should have said that memorial.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I just have a thought that jumped into my mind.
Okay.
There is a... We have a state parks and organization now. I wonder if there's a mechanism that the state parks can get involved in this. They have 36 million rentals.
That's right.
Because they have...
I think that's a very
good... They have large carryover funds despite
and,
the...
And add situation. These memorials to this fund. Yeah, I think that's a... We'll check on that. Very good. Any other... on that item. The next one is require complimentary hunting and fishing licenses for veterans and active guard.
Madam Chair, I have something in LC right now. There is a proposal in the governor's package that would do exactly the same thing, only the governor's package would have a individual go purchase his hunting and fishing license. No tags, mind you. We're not
right.
Bag tests.
Okay.
Hunting, just the license themselves. Then they would fill out some new bureaucratic paperwork form that we have created. They would submit that form to the military department, who, of course, would hire a bureaucracy to manage these forms and the reimbursements,
right.
And they would reimburse the money, you know, through the typical disbursement process of the state and go it back. The bill I have put up... basically makes a point of sale, and it will be point of sale based on an individual possessing a valid federal identification
right.
card as active service, a valid federal reserve card that sees an active service, and it also, at this point in the text, any retiree that has a retiree card that's valid in the next 12 months. And I just picked 1 year as a place to start. It can be
okay.
amended later.
Mm-hmm.
But all three of those identification cards exist and can be presented at point of sale to purchase it. And to me, it's just, if we're going to do this, and the governor's even agreeing with this, we should do this in an economical manner, in an economical
Absolutely.
Basis, and not create bureaucracy. And
Absolutely.
That is an LC now.
Any other discussion? On G, fund $250,000 life insurance for the Guard serving in war zones and make it retroactive to Afghanistan. And we're likening this one to the one that has been done by Governor Richardson in the state of New Mexico. And it's my understanding at this time it's only a $16 premium a month. And so that is what we're proposing.
Madam Chair, does that include making it retroactive to $16 per month? My guess would be
yes.
If we're making it retroactive, it'd be a lot more than $16.
Mm-hmm.
So, well,
that's what
out.
I have that okay. bill
okay.
here.
Yeah.
We can look at it. I believe it does, but I will check that. Good point.
And again, Madam Chair, this is the President and bipartisan members of Congress have already introduced this within the last week. Or at least a proposal in the federal level. The federal government, the Department of Defense, as part of their existing $80 billion supplemental will cover life insurance. It will cover retroactive to, and I'm just trying to remember, death gratuity to 100,000 is presently like 12,000.
Right.
And it will make the minimum that the U.S. government pays for in insurance in the Soldiers Group Life Insurance Policy. I see them nodding, make sure they didn't get 25 cents. It will make that retroactive too. So there is a bill in the federal government in the existing appropriations process to do exactly this, plus bump up the benefits that are paid to spouses and children, and it will make that retroactive to 9/11.
Madam Chair, I also had a question. And can I just say, it's not. Is it $250,000 life insurance?
I was going to say
it was $100.
No, no. It will bump it to. It's $100,000 in cash death gratuity benefits, and the minimum policy would be $250,000 in life insurance that the U.S. government would be paying for. It would then increase the minimum that you can purchase, or the maximum you can purchase. Somebody's got to look around here, to $600,000. I see someone from Representative Hooley's office back there might be more familiar, but it's quite a package that came out in the last 4 or 5 days that they're putting forward. And I think, we may pursue this. I think this is going to be resolved because no congressman in their right mind is going to vote against it at this point. It's going to be publicly passed and through the federal legislation very rapidly.
Good. We'll probably go ahead and file the bill, but we can just pull it and say yay and announce it on the floor. Yes, sir.
If we do that for the National Guard.
Would you come up here, please, Matt?
Again, for the record, my name is Matt McDonald, representing Oregon Veterans. If we do that for the National Guard, what about those active duty in the Army, Navy, Air Force, Marine Corps, from the state of Oregon? Don't they rate the same as the National Guard that have been activated? They're in a war zone, so if we do it for the National Guard, we should also do it for active duty personnel from the state of Oregon.
Madam Chair.
Representative Volker.
We should also cover the Marine Corps Reserve, if we're going to do this, the Marine Corps Reserve, the Army Reserve, the Air Force Reserve, and
Right. Basically
residents that are serving from the state of Oregon.
I'd say all personnel on active duty in the Armed Forces of the United States from the state of Oregon.
And from the state of Oregon, how do you determine that?
You determine from the state of Oregon is the place where they enlist or where they receive where they have joined as an officer. So if they enlist in the state of Oregon, it's the same prerequisite as for the Medal of Honor recipients. If they enlist in the state of Oregon, if it's an officer, has residence in the state of Oregon at the time he receives his commission, then they're considered a state of Oregon veteran.
And Madam Chair, there's also, we won't debate it, we can get a letter, there's also a statutory thing under HOMA record for taxes. Every soldier has to apply, and if their home of record was Oregon, and that's really what we're getting at here, if their listed home of record was Oregon or is listed as Oregon, then, by the way, they're paying taxes in Oregon, and they're not here either.
Mm-hmm.
And,
okay.
So there's several.
Thank you.
Define their home
material. Okay. Good. Okay. I hope everybody knows these are not, these were just concepts, not, we would never leave out, any of the other military.
Okay. A clarifying question, Madam Chairman. Almost every one of these requires money.
Right.
And so this is just concepts at this time. We're not saying we're committed to any particular item.
Well, if y'all like it, I'm committed. And I'll find the money.
That would be great. I just want to as part of being on Revenue Committee, and it's like...
We should get you off of that committee.
No, that's not it. It's just like, okay, where is this money going to come from?
Oh, you're sounding more and more like Chairman Butler.
But, because I know there are federal funds for a number of these things, and so that's an important component to...
It is a very important...
Be realistic, right. And we might have to prioritize at one point.
Absolutely. Okay, the next one is to H, implement increased tax exemption of $4,000 for property taxes for veteran and our surviving spouse if resident of Oregon.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
On that one, I would say that this has also reflects something that's being proposed in New Mexico as well. But the thing to remember with, when we compare ourselves to New Mexico is they don't operate under the same sort of income tax structure that we do. I would argue that doing that on the property tax side in Oregon puts a burden on the local governments, the counties and the cities in Oregon, and perhaps we would be better focused to look at a tax, a state income tax credit.
Okay.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
One of the things that the veterans themselves, or actually the serving soldiers, raised overseas was not so much the tax exemption, but tax deferment.
Okay.
Is that because many of them are taking a huge cut in pay to get shot at, that, you know, they don't have in their budgets now the money. And, of course, if you don't pay your taxes, you're going to get foreclosed on during mobilization. But the interest rate is at a very ungodly rate.
And so, are you talking about deferment on property taxes?
Property taxes.
Okay. When we get
property
down to
interest,
M.
Actually, say they were asking for interest-free deferment on property taxes while they were deployed.
Okay. When we get down, or L, I guess. Wait, M and L may have that. Let's see if that they do. If not, we'll add it in. Okay, anything else on H? I, provide child care funds for children of deployed, active, and I guess I should say military, or guard until pre-salary level, that means pre-deployment, salary level is restored. See, when the spouse goes to work because the veteran has lost his job, I understand there's quite a difference, and children who've not previously been in child care now are in child care so the spouse can work. Any discussion?
Yeah, Madam Chair, I don't have any problem reviewing it, but I think like the other was, at some point we're going to have a finite return of what we can physically afford to do, but obviously we can't even discuss it after Monday if we don't have something
that's
to
right,
discuss.
That's right.
Put it out.
So should this say deployed active guard, or should that say deployed. Something else?
I would say active deployed active military.
Okay.
And again, I think that Jim needs to, Madam Chair, look at the home of record. These all have to have a home of record reference.
Okay.
Because if your home of record is Oregon, you're paying taxes here, even if you're in Afghanistan.
Okay. Mm-hmm. J, require employment department to include spouses, dependents of deployed active military in their jobs and jobs plus programs. If you're not familiar with jobs and jobs plus, this program exists both in the employment agency and in DHS, and there's a stipend for an employer who will hire individuals in this program. I asked them this week how many military, and that has not ever been a part of their program, so it's an awareness issue, kind of like the previous issue that we handled. Any problem?
No.
Okay. K, permit veterans 70% disabled who are eligible for the veterans homestead property tax a partial exemption, or who are eligible for the homestead property tax partial exemption, to defer property taxes on portion of the homestead that is not exempt. Establish total exemption for veterans 100% disabled, and it would be for tax years after July 1st, 2004. And this was proposed by two veterans and brought by a previous representative. Any problem? KL, require the Department of Revenue to waive late penalties for late filings of returns or late payment of tax when delinquency is due to mental or physical disability. And this would be for reports due after January the 1st, 2004.
Madam Chair, I'm assuming these dates will probably change.
Probably.
Because these are previous bills. The dates may change on.
Well, but I changed that one already. It's because their taxes are due now for 2004.
That's correct.
So I just carried it into this period.
Well, Madam Chair, even if we pass this bill, it wouldn't become, unless there's an emergency clause, it wouldn't become effective until after that year.
No, this is for reports, not the date of the actual. I see what you're doing.
Same. Right, I'm looking back up at the previous one.
Okay.
I'm just pointing the fact out some of these dates for legal reasons may have to change.
Mm-hmm. All right. M. Permit spouse of disabled person qualified for deferral of homestead property taxes to continue to defer the property taxes on the homestead following the death of disabled person. No problem. N. Fund the military department's capital construction needs.
Madam Chair, isn't this under the? This is already in their budget, right? This is the capital construction requirement is in their budget, and this, of course, involves the federal matching funds.
I've been working with them. They have some additional work that they have not been able to put into the budget because of the shortage of general funds. So we're looking at some alternative ways of getting them the money they need to bring those armories up to standards. So that's one of the things that we are working on.
Good.
So, Madam Chair, we're talking deferred maintenance and capital construction.
Well, it's repairs and capital construction that are caused because of the lack of maintenance on it.
But Madam Chair, we should look at it. If we can't fund it, we should make the public know that there's a problem.
Right. Okay. Restrict Oregon officials. Here's this. What we were just talking about, from removing veterans from Medicaid when veteran health insurance doesn't provide for certain services. Mm-hmm. P, provide for housing for homeless veterans and spouse and dependents.
This is a challenging one, Madam.
Yeah, it's very challenging.
Okay. Q, establish veterans a veteran oversight committee to assess veteran homes, medical, educational, employment services.
Madam Chair, just a question. We're talking to state governor appointing committee. I mean, can you give us?
We haven't determined that. Okay. If there's not a need, I was told that either there is a need. We have a problem with one of our homes right now where we need some veterans to. Well, we felt that if there were veterans doing the oversight, they really understand what should be occurring.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't mean it has to be totally veterans. Fund unemployed spouse or guardian of a disabled veteran's living allowance while caring for the veteran. And from what Mr. Fryer said, do you know on this one, Mac, I was listening for him to say something about that they could be paid if the spouse has to stay home and take care of this veteran. As in other disabled situations here at the state.
Maybe you can just stay there.
What the Veterans Administration does is they have an additional payment made for a spouse of a pension veteran or a service-connected veteran, 30% or more. It's not a specific amount so she can stay home or he can stay home for the spouse. It's just built into the pension and or service-connected disability rates.
Well, it's our understanding that that's not a living allowance.
No, it's in fact, it's not even a property of the spouse. It's the veteran's property. The funding is all the veteran's money, so if even if there was a divorce, the veteran would still have that money as long until the divorce was final, a separation or anything. So it's not an amount that's adequate to do much of anything.
We don't want to have, if he can stay in his own home like Project Independence,
right?
But yet he needs someone there with him, we want to make that available for him. So he doesn't have to move away from his home to an assisted care facility if he wants to be in his home, just like the seniors. It's 10% of the cost.
The pension that I was talking about, that's its provision is that the veteran doesn't have to move anywhere. He'll still get that money. Whether or not that's enough money for the spouse to stay home, I don't know. It depends upon the circumstance of each case.
Okay.
They have a lot
okay,
of
well, apparently in
costs.
Some cases, then it's not enough to, you know, for a spouse to be able to stay home and take care of them because that's brought up the issue.
Right.
Okay. You can stay there, Mr. Fryer, if you want to. Okay, the next one, S, fund additional services to assure that veterans and widows or widowers get the VA benefits they are due. Potentially $250 million more VA funds using Oklahoma as the model. How's that?
Is this a federal picture, ma'am?
No, state. Okay. That's the Oklahoma program. That came from... Okay, the next one. Establish the slogan, support our troops, as an acceptable decal for public-private vehicles. I think it was very repulsive to find out that the... Was it University of Oregon? That you could not have a decal that said support our troops on a state car. I mean, I just made me ill. Any problem?
No.
Okay. I'm not sure. It was University of Oregon, but if anybody else saw that.
And it wasn't just aimed at support our troops. It was aimed at any sort of...
Yeah. There were several, but that one really, I thought, was in poor taste to deny that one. Fund a transition stipend to a veteran's family spouse upon deployment of guardsmen to a war zone. What we've heard from the family coordinators is, you know, in many cases when that veteran is deployed, all of a sudden there's additional expense and that has not been planned for. And so whether it's traveling with the veteran to his departure or having children being taken care of while they're departing or... So, is there any problem?
Madam Chair?
Yes.
The only thing I would...
And it wouldn't be guardsmen again. It would
right.
be Oregon.
That might be a structural one hard to implement.
Yeah.
And the second thing is that, having been a colonel, it is there needs to be some parameters in this.
Okay. I'll put a B and a B by this one.
I'd be most willing to help second lieutenants and... Most of the enlisted, but
you said what did you here. Say needed to be it needs to be have a what?
Start
with
be,
a P. What was it?
Parameters.
Parameters.
Right.
Thank you.
I have serious problem if officers fall into that category. They can take care of themselves.
Okay.
Except the junior officers, of course.
Okay.
Not much better than parameters.
All right, the next one, provide, this is, we're on V, Representative Hunt, provide tax credit to private businesses employing jobless veterans. Okay. Debbie?
Would it be one of those situations, though, Madam Chair, where we don't want to lose an existing job and we don't want an employer firing somebody who has a job to go receive a tax credit?
We would probably have to write that in. Good point. Not fire to hire, right?
Right.
Okay. Require colleges, community colleges, to give 2 years free tuition, books, fees to full-time veteran or veteran's widow or widower.
We're not funding, Madam Chair. We crucified community colleges.
Yeah,
I'm not sure how we'd fund
it. Well, I think they already are doing that in some cases.
Yeah, in many cases they're doing it, and again, it goes back to this referendum that I haven't seen all the text of yet. Actually has a little scholarship clause in it that may address some of those issues here. But
members, this is information from the Oregon Community College Association that arrived yesterday for you on this issue.
Good. Okay. Well, there another one's considering it, free tuition. So good. Well, we want to compliment Klamath Community College, Southwestern Oregon Community College.
Scholarships too.
For offering this, and we appreciate that Tillamook Bay Community College is considering free tuition. I compliment them.
Chairman, there's also a scholarship fund through the that is, you know, I believe it's through the Oregon Opportunity Grants, but for troops to teachers, that if a serviceman wants to be a teacher, I think they can get it, you know, everything taken care of also.
Great.
Follow up, Madam Chair.
Yes, sir.
You know, at some point, we have to wrap our hands around the educational issue here. I have no problem with it going forth like this, but in conversation with Pearl Caldwell, I know, for example, there is not a shortage of education funds on the Guard side, and there is an ever-expanding programs on the federal side. And I'm sure, if nothing else, we can get a recruiter. I see probably my LA is now a heart attack. Get a recruiter or someone who understands the educational benefits that are supposed to exist at the federal level, because I actually think, once again, the federal administration is rapidly endorsing expanded educational and benefit programs in response to whatever we'll say.
Requests?
Great. Okay. And we're to X, establish the Oregon Veterans Support Task Force to include the ODVA. Now, y'all, don't charge me for this.
Okay.
The CVSOs, that's the Oregon Department of Veteran Affairs, and that's the County Veteran Service Officers, and Department of Health and Human Services, and the seniors and people with disabilities. To facilitate stronger linkage between organizations, eliminate duplicate services, expand client access to benefits and services, build strong local accredited network of services for veterans throughout Oregon, and hire Frank Fryer. Oh!
Had a very good salary, I hope.
Yes. Any questions on that one? Okay, and we're now.
Chair, I do have one question.
Okay.
Okay. You did get a pass for one, but there's four acronyms there, so that is dollar.
She did not bring her purse.
I know, I happened to forget my purse, thank goodness. But I will fill it in. Okay, why? Require OMAP, Oregon Medical Assistance Program, to provide current costs per client for prescription drugs, durable medical supplies, other, there's an E missing there, and other medical expenses for clients, to in order to be able to compare that with the non-public programs.
That's how they say it in Texas.
That's right. Other. Oh. Yeah, that's how they say it in Texas. Thank you. This next one was brand new, and I did ask Representative Boquist to look this up. Perhaps Mr. McDonald knows this, or Kevin, he's gone. This is brought by a veteran, and he wants to end the penalty that he is currently addressing for buying back his military service in PERS. And that was relative to, here we go, Senate Bill 711, the Military Purchase Bill of 1997. Mm-hmm. And he served from 69 to 71. He was drafted. And so we apparently passed this bill. Do you know about it, Mike? We passed this bill. No, I wasn't here, but where you could buy back in for the time you lost. So at one time it was a $2,000 bill for him. The next time he inquired of PERS, it had gone to $35,000. So apparently it's an act we either need to correct. Are you aware of this, anyone?
It's under PERS. If someone is in PERS and goes into the service, they can use that time for length of service under PERS.
So they accrue earnings?
Right. Although what the bill did was allow people who, like myself, I was in the service and became a member of PERS, to buy up to 4 years of your service credit before PERS at some rate PERS would set, depending upon the lifetime value of your increased benefits. And I haven't figured out how I'm going to do it yet, or whether I'm going to do it, because it's probably prohibitive.
Okay, well, you'll see what happened to him. And, I mean, just going from this 2,400 to, what was it, 35,000 or something, he asked us to help him. So maybe I'll talk with you further. I don't know of any others that are involved in it, but probably are. Probably now that we've met you, there are probably quite a few that were on PERS previously. Okay, and Z1, fund and establish a criteria for home loans via a new bond issue. Discussion? Z2, this is an LC 478 I found out from the department. Increase the in loan to value ratio from 97 to 100%. We discussed that on home loans. Z3, fund appropriation for the Oregon Veterans Home for maintenance, repair, and or administration. Z4, fund 10-year, 100% educational benefit, contractual right, retroactive, rights transferable to spouse and children for veterans.
Again, Madam Chair, I think some of this might be federal crossover that we need to investigate at a later time.
And Z5, fund guard license plates.
Motor vehicle license plates.
Mm-hmm. Okay, are there any other bills that y'all want to mention at this time? Okay.
You're saying that are not on this list?
Right.
Having come in late, let me just list a couple which may be on this list, but I don't see them. One, I know Representative Sumner has a bill which I didn't see on here. Again, I apologize if it's on here. Related to the Oregon Veterans Home, he wants to permanentize, if that's a word.
I like that
make
one.
Permanent the tax checkoff status on the Oregon tax form for the Oregon Veterans Home. So I know he has a bill. It's an LC. I don't know what the status of it is.
Good. And who would this be?
Representative Sumner.
Okay.
Representative Farr and I have a bill also in LC related to a renter's tax credit for veterans and for deployed troops and their families.
Okay. These are both LCs?
Correct.
Okay.
We had testimony about, if I understand it correctly, that right now as a state we tax retention bonuses, even though the federal government doesn't. Did I take notes correctly on that?
That's right.
So I would like to see us. I don't have an LC draft in that. I'm happy to do it or happy to have somebody else do it. That was just one I had flagged as a good idea.
That's a committee?
Sure.
Okay.
Related to transportation, there was some suggestion about there are a variety of ways to do this, either reimbursing public transit agencies or reimbursing employers. I don't know what the best way to do it is, but in some way expand the state's involvement in providing transportation vouchers to veterans, basically. That seemed to be a limitation right now.
Okay.
You're thinking about things like
TriMet.
Yeah. Okay. It might be a different thing in different parts of the state, but in some way,
we
say that's important for employment access, healthcare access.
Okay.
And the last one, and in the spirit of being really radical on this, I guess I would love to see us, I see a lot of dollar figures appearing on these. I would love to see us find some way that we might suggest to pay for these.
Mm-hmm.
The governor's budget has $700,000. You probably get down to letter C or D, and we've spent the $700,000.
Mm-hmm. I do have a source, and you weren't here, in Reverend Reverend Boquist.
I got that backwards, Reverend Hunt. Okay, Lieutenant Colonel Hunt,
Reverend Boquist, also has found some funds, and I have also, and
great. Well, I mean, my general concern is one of my anxieties is that we're going to raise expectations among veterans, National Guard members. We're going to pass some things, we're going to look great, and then we're going to send them over to Ways and Means, and there's going to be either no money to pay for them, or it's going to come out of something else that maybe we would have not liked to see it come out of.
Right.
And so we're going to look good, but somebody else is going to look bad, and the expectations that we will have raised will be dashed. So
no, I think that's a very good point, and we don't want to do that. even send them to Ways and Means till we know precisely right. where the funds good. Will be coming from, because that's not a good thing to do. Okay, are there any others to be added that you're aware of at this time? Okay, and if you just glance quickly, we won't discuss these, but let's just glance quickly at the proposed joint memorials, and we'll just go through them. The first one I'm happy to say is mine, and I turned it in. It's I've done this every year, and it's still important. But giving the veterans the right to access medical care institutions at any location, and Congresswoman Hooley also agrees with that. Establish the definition of a veteran. Remove restrictions on home loan bonds. D, provide health coverage for dental, visual, physical health, including mental illness parity. Extend from 7 to 21 days, I'm not sure I understand this one, to decompress following war duty.
Yeah, Madam Chair, what it is equalization.
You get paid during that time.
No, no, what this really... This is a memorial. It would be a memorial that would address that the Department of Defense, the Congress forced the Department of Defense. Not sure that can happen, but so that when the National Guard, and this is really a National Guard problem and an individual reserve problem, that when they come back, that there is more than 7 days of demobilization time.
Okay.
It allows there to be 14, or in fact, what they're saying, 21 days of mandatory demobilization time, during which you could do all of the various processing, so on and so forth. Some services are 14 days. The guards like down to 4 days.
Oh.
Some of it's good, some of it's bad.
Okay. Is that something we could change with a bill for the Oregon Guard?
No.
Okay. F, require the federal government to return the bodies of deceased veterans to their home site.
They don't do that now.
Well, just with the funeral that is today, unfortunately, of Soldier Moore in Roseburg, it's my understanding they were asked to provide a hearse, and the government was asked to bring him back to where he started from. Yeah. And they did, which I don't know. Apparently, doesn't happen. They flew him home. G, immediately cure the Delta, the difference, which can range from $118 to $783. The Delta between Oregon and other states, federal VA funding for compensation and pension benefits and other expenditures. And that is wrong. And we need to go back. We need to hire a huge auditing firm and go back, like I did for Special Ed. You know, we found out the federal government owes us $2 billion for IDEA, and bill the government for this. This is very wrong for that to be that much different for our soldiers versus another state. Mm-hmm. H, request the president. I did this one. Bush and Congress to recognize our Oregon veterans' contributions in the wars. Establish Veterans Capital Fund for grants to veterans starting private businesses. Establish a length of tour of duty to war zone for Guard reserves pre-deployment. Establish an Oregon Federal Outreach Center. Expedite awards of campaign medals. Advocate retirement at 55. Pay deductible and counseling for deployed guard after TRICARE runs out. Allow an IRA rollover to a Roth IRA. Allow combat pay to be included as tax relief incentive. Establish shorter train-up deployment. Establish focus on electronic solutions for congressional inquiries direct to JAG. I have no clue what that means. And change health care to HSA or other carrier. So if there are other joint memorials that you'd like to see, or discuss any of these, I appreciate your comments on this page, and if you return it to us, we'll pursue.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Again, on this page, as with the others, I think we need to kind of replace, in most cases, the word guard with a generic term that covers the Navy Reserve, Marine Reserve,
right, absolutely.
Reserve, active defense,
right.
Home of record people, so on and so forth. I think
absolutely.
Jim can work on, Madam Chair.
Okay.
And the head counsel. Figure out how to say that.
Yeah, they probably don't know. And the very last were some joint resolutions, and one is the recognition of service in the Afghan-Iraqi wars, a recognition of the Oregon National Guard, which would recognize excellence of their culture, training, soldiering, and that again probably includes reserves. I don't know. We need a constitutional amendment deleting the 30-year deadline for home loan applications, amending Article 11, Section 3. And urging the Oregon Veterans Home Trust Fund to have a payroll deduction option for state employees.
Madam Chair, I have a question.
Yes, sir.
C, you said constitution, a joint resolution for a constitutional amendment, or it's not a state constitution.
Yeah, that's the way you do it.
You do a joint resolution?
Yeah, mm-hmm. And then it goes to the people for a vote.
So it's a referendum.
Correct.
Okay.
I think the term is referral.
Referral, right.
It's technically an HJR. It's House joint resolution.
Yeah. To get a referral.
Right. A joint resolution is one of those things that doesn't go to the governor for
right.
a signature.
Yeah, we
a
do.
A constitutional amendment doesn't yeah. go to yeah. the governor for a signature, and therefore this is the mechanism we use.
Well, being yeah. a freshman, I'm doing that, but I didn't know what it was.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Well, that's the pagers will be
right.
on.
That's yeah. the one.
That's the one. The
okay,
first
right.
one you talked about will be on. Okay. Are there any questions? I appreciate your review, and I believe our good administrator also gave you, did you hand out something?
I have for the members a copy of the committee plan.
Okay.
Submitted to the speaker this week.
Thank you.
We'll find a lot of them.
This is, you're receiving, y'all did not hear it, the committee plan that was submitted to the speaker, and thank you for your input on that. From henceforth, since we all have, you know, an option for five special bills.
Two.
Oh, is it two?
Yes. Except for you,
John. Uh-oh. Oh, it's two. Okay.
Other people.
Anyway, if you should determine that one of your bills is going to be used in this, I'd appreciate knowing. If you'd see me first, because we will be... we will have some committee bill requests with excellent relating clauses for future bills should we find it necessary.
Okay.
Is there any limit on what a committee can submit after?
These will be pre-filed on Monday. But I don't know.
It's my understanding the committee doesn't have any special. We don't have special
numbers. We don't have two for the committee.
Right. Now, at that point, you'd have to go ask the speaker for a special dispensation.
That's right. And we will be moving these bills through the House as we can. Certainly want to keep our veterans at the forefront of our thinking this year. We're most grateful for all the service of our military men and women, and so proud of them, and seeing their activities on Sunday in the election in Iraq was just made you feel wonderful, and I want to thank you, Representative Boquist, for your part in getting the right to vote for those Iraqi people. Thank you. Is there any other business? Representative Hunt.
Do you have a proposed schedule, Madam Chair, related to the statewide public hearings?
As a matter of fact, I will be getting you that. Jackie is here, and my administrator, and should be getting you that. Okay. Anything else? for the committee. Thank you for, and I think it's good that we've done this.
It is,
and appreciate any comments. Thank you. With that, we are adjourned.